Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
On TV, on radio, and on your smartphone, this is Talk TV.
Well, if you've been hearing the name Titania a lot lately, you may be wondering where it's come from. Well, Titania McGrath is one of the biggest new things on the Twitter account. If you don't follow Titania McGrath, then I strongly advise you do, because you clearly aren't woke enough. Now, of course, woke being the new term, really, for... Well, I suppose it doesn't really do justice to political correctness, because it's political correctness times a million percent. But the newspapers have been full of, well, the unmasking of who is behind this Twitter account, and I'm delighted to say he's actually the person I guessed it was, and he's the comedian Andrew Doyle. Good morning to you, Andrew. I knew it was you because Titania followed me on Twitter, and I knew you already did. Now, it's a brilliant account. It's 200,000 plus followers in a matter of a very, very, very short time, and this account has taken the Twitter sphere by storm, mostly because people have been debating who on earth is behind it.
Yeah.
But the beginning of when it took people by storm was the fact that an awful lot of people, because one of my favourite things was retweeting what Titania had to say, not realising that it was a spoof account. Let's just read out some of the tweets you've sent out. I mean, these are getting tens and tens of thousands of likes. You'll notice there's not a single obese player in the England football team. This kind of discrimination is precisely why the fat acceptance movement is so essential. If you only have sex with people you find attractive, you might want to ask yourself why you're such a superficial bigot. It's our children who will suffer most from Brexit, therefore we should hold a second referendum, but only allow under 12s to vote. And it's one of my particular favourites over the weekend. Gay: Leonardo da Vinci, Alan Turing, Virginia Woolf. Straight: Robert Mugabe, Harold Shipman, Adolf Hitler. Pick a side.
Yeah,
I'm fairly able to read that without a chuckle. Now, I retweet these and I'm amazed by how many people will go, "This is outrageous," but yeah, not realising it is a spoof account.
I'm really surprised. I mean, it's always been the case that lots and lots of people react badly because either they take it seriously and they attack her and get very upset, or they get angry because of what it's satirising. So you get it actually...
You're not allowed to joke about that.
No, you're not, exactly. Yeah. So what I like about it is it sort of riles up people on the extreme sides of both sides of the political spectrum, because you get these right-wingers who take it very, very seriously and get really, really angry, and then she gets into arguments with them because she doesn't break character, and then you get the left who are upset because you're not meant to mock their holy cult.
With Shang, it depends on really on the setting, whether he would like brag about having financed Quran burning or totally denies that he has anything to do with it.
Yeah. Well, the idea wasn't to burn the Quran. It just happened to be like that, but never mind.
Is there a big business in Quran burning? Is that like a thing?
It's a growing... Yeah.
Because actually it is, because Salwan Mumika, he's burning Quran and he's also live streaming it.
He's making money.
Right? And he's making money out of it.
Well, that's incredible, because there's a play by Christopher Marlowe, which was written in the 16th century, which culminates in a Quran burning at the end. And modern productions of that, they don't do that bit.
Wait. In a Quran burning?
Yeah.
Really? What play is that?
16th century?
16th century. Christopher Marlowe, who's a contemporary of Shakespeare, wrote Tamburlaine Part 2. So it's the sequel, Tamburlaine Part 2. And at the end of that, Tamburlaine burns his Quran on stage.
What?
Yeah.
So we are just copycats.
You're just copying Christopher Marlowe. Christopher Marlowe was the same age as Shakespeare, but his life was cut short because he was stabbed in the face. He was a spy, and he died at an early age.
He was also a spy.
He was a spy.
Really? Yeah.
Shang is accused to be a spy as well.
Yeah.
For Russia.
So you should read this play. You might have a lot in common with Christopher Marlowe. Yeah.
What was the point of burning the Quran in the play, though?
Well, because Tamburlaine is a Muslim conqueror. And at the end, he has lost everything and feels that God has forsaken him. So he burns the Quran.
So he becomes an apostate?
Yeah.
Okay, that's something I have in common with him.
Ah, there we go. But he's he also kills his son, and he's a proper conqueror.
Lots in common. No, I'm joking. Yeah.
There's a good scene where he's conquered this area and he's taken the kings, and he forces the kings to pull his chariot on all fours. So he's a kind of really sadistic.
Wow.
It's great. I love it.
It's great.
I have to read it.
Yeah.
Are you a big Tupac fan?
No. Is that going to be a problem?
No, because I see that you have quoted him in the book, or she has.
She has. No, she's a big Tupac fan.
Really?
Yeah. She loves NWA, Tupac, Wu-Tang.
So we are talking about Tatiana.
Yeah.
Well,
Titania.
Only likes... artwork or creative things that are done by people of color, on principle.
Okay.
So rap. She loves rap.
Where is she from, though? Or
Kensington.
Is it a she?
Yeah, she. Kensington. Okay. Well,
she. With a Z. Yeah.
With a Z. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it varies.
Yeah, I was thinking of the McGrath. It sounds like Australian.
Well, it sounds Irish.
Oh, right.
So it's an Irish name, which is a nod to that.
Okay.
I'm from Irish. My family are Irish, but Titania is named after Titania from Midsummer Night's Dream, the Shakespeare play, because she's queen of the fairies.
Mm-hmm.
The idea being, you know, I'm intimating that she is fantastical and a bit mad.
Do you know what the first chapter is called in the book? Mein Kampf.
Yeah. I mean, she's a victim, you know, she's been through a lot.
So can you tell us about her? Who is she?
That started because I think it was 2018, because I was just getting really bored with all the social justice stuff. Not just that, but that no one was mocking it. And it seemed to me inherently ridiculous. So, and I thought I would attempt to embody it, satirize it, as though I was one of them. And the best way was Twitter, because that Twitter is their battlefield, their playground. So I created this character, and I had an idea that she would be a slam poet. Jeff slam poetry in Sweden.
Yeah. We try to.
Well, it's just bad poetry, really.
Okay.
So it's where you don't have any scansion or meter or anything like that. You just sort of leave a lot of pauses in the wrong places and perform it in a really declamatory way.
I get it.
It's bad. It's bad.
But I thought the suburbs here.
It doesn't require talent or ability. So she would love that. So she did that, but she thinks she's a genius. And the idea is that she thinks she's better than Shakespeare, better than Chaucer. She's the best poet who ever lived.
And the name, how did you come up with the name?
So simple. Well, actually, it was a suggestion of a friend of mine, Lisa. And it seemed to fit for me because the name Titania, as I say, has an allusion to Shakespeare's character. So it's sort of, and it's also quite a posh name. So
Titania.
People in England or the UK who are called things like Titania or Sophia or Olivia, they're privileged. And I wanted to signal that she was, because I find it really funny that the people who are often berating other people about privilege are generally really rich. So she lives in a really rich area. It's probably,
how else are you going to find the time, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, well, exactly. She's independently wealthy.
Yeah. So you can be either rich or unemployed.
Yeah, I mean, look at the Just Stop Oil activists. Have you ever heard them speak? They sound like their royal family. They all sound like a caricature. And they have names like Sage Willoughby and Hugo Ponsford, and those are actual real names of some of the activists. And they speak
Hugo Ponsford.
I think he was one of the Colston Four, one of the guys who pulled down the statue of the slave trader in Bristol.
Wow!
But they always have these really upper class names, yeah. And the reason they've got time to glue themselves to a road is because they don't have to work, or to glue themselves to Van Gogh's painting. Did you see that in the National Gallery? So yeah. they went in there and they glued themselves to the painting and threw tomato soup at it and then shouted at everyone about how the world was coming to an end in this really plummy, cut glass English accent. And it was very funny, you know.
It's the same here. Like yeah. When they glue themselves to the road, it's always white people and some occasional Persian among
them. Is that
them.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Who they probably brought along. It's probably one of their au pairs or something.
No, it's like their dentist's daughter. Or
yeah, exactly.
Like
yeah, it just yeah. shows that they're inclusive.
Yeah.
I did go to an environmental protest. I was writing about it for the Daily Mail, and I went there, and it was in Oxford Circus, and Emma Thompson showed up, and she'd just flown over from LA first class to lecture everyone about their carbon footprint. I really enjoyed that. And it was all white people, like the whole thing. It was just what posh white people doing sort of with acoustic guitars.
I hate all the casts in the Harry Potter.
On principle?
Yeah, because yeah. what they did with the writer.
They threw her under the bus quite yes. spectacularly. So that was a Daniel Radcliffe, Rupert Grint, and
yeah,
what's
all
the,
of them.
The woman, Emma Watson. Emma, I mean, yeah. she's never been able to act. She's the worst actor in the world. And she should be really grateful that as a child she was plucked from obscurity, made a millionaire, made a star, when she has no talent whatsoever. You'd think she would be quite grateful to J.K. Rowling, but they all said yeah. that she was bigoted, effectively.
And the fact that they were criticizing her is because she doesn't believe in intersexual, or...?
It's because J.K. Rowling has said that... That sex is immutable, you can't change your sex, and it's actually a threat to women's rights. If yep. you say that anyone can identify as a woman and enter into women-only spaces, such as domestic violence refuge centres, that is a threat to their rights. She wrote an essay explaining her view very, very succinctly and clearly on her website. And she is a victim of domestic violence herself, and that's where it comes from. You know, that's where her interest in this sparked. She's never said anything transphobic, hateful towards the trans community, quite the contrary. But this narrative has grown up because people don't bother to look and read for themselves what she actually said. And they've decided she's a monster. She gets rape and death threats every day for saying nothing.
I have to say...
That isn't it also so that one of the... I don't know if they were celebrating a couple of examples, the copies, but even to the party that she was not invited. She's not invited to her.
No, they did an event, didn't they? A Harry Potter reunion.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And she wasn't invited. I think
she made the whole fucking
yeah.
thing.
Yeah, they. I think they took her name off. One activist created new book covers because they love the books, right?
Yeah.
But it's taken her name off. So you can buy this book that you can slot the book into, or had it rebound without her name. She's kind of key to the whole thing.
It's like having a Muslim holiday and not inviting Muhammad, right?
Right, it would be exactly like that.
But I have to say, though, like it seems that here in Sweden, on just this front, like this madness did not go as mainstream as it has in the Anglosphere. Like in the US, it seems the universities have gone totally berserk with the whole like... gender identity thing, identity politics.
Yeah.
Here it's like it's just
oh,
like
it's
I
coming.
Would say a minority. We have like our
you know,
own
I'm,
kind of.
I'm not sure because like Swedish people are not that hysterical.
No,
it's
that's
more
true.
Passive aggressive. This has been going on even at the time when I was doing my doctorate, man. This is happening.
Yeah, but not mainstream in the same way. Like in the
it doesn't become a thing of the media. But I was at university working there between 2010 and 2015. I was accused of misogynist behavior.
Really? What did you do?
Because I fell asleep at meetings.
And how is that misogynist?
Well, because they said every time there's a woman leading the meeting, you fall asleep. And I said, well, there is a majority of women at this institution, so
yeah.
the odds of a woman leading the meeting is higher than a man.
Yes.
And I can't be at meetings because I fall asleep.
But what a strange conclusion that
yeah.
they thought it was a misogynistic protest.
Yeah, they went to the board and accused me of using power strategies.
That's
to
hilarious.
Like, yeah.
So it does happen here.
This was 13 years ago.
Why did you fall asleep?
Because it's boring. Because yeah. I know what the meeting is going to be about.
I mean, you know what the meeting is going to be about.
We've had it like two times this year already. It's the same meeting. It's
Swedes loves meetings. I love meetings.
Well, I hate meetings. I used to work at a school where it was quite unionized and they had a limit. So after 45 minutes, people were allowed to just stand up and walk out of a meeting.
Really?
We couldn't have a long meeting, which was great. That was really good.
I love it.
It meant people got things done, you know. But I think, but just back to your point about Sweden, I mean, the passive nature of Swedish people. Someone said this to me last night, that she felt the Swedish people were, and she is Swedish, she was saying that we don't like conflict.
No,
we like to go along, we're quite conformist. Mm. But that also means the seeds are there. You've got the fertile ground for gender identity ideology to take root because no one will complain.
Or fascism, or let's see.
Or fascism, which, yes. Well, I mean, there's an overlap.
But you won't see the kicking and screaming. People will just go along.
I think you will see kicking and screaming from a very small minority. I'm sure even a minority of Swedes are capable of kicking and screaming. And that will be sufficient for everyone else to cow and to their judgment and say, okay, well, we'll just do whatever you say. I think it is coming because it seems to spread quicker in the Anglosphere, but it eventually gets there. Now it's going to Spain and Italy.
Well, I mean, didn't we have it last year with the Konstfack? It's one of the most prestigious art institutions.
Yes.
So one of the rooms where you can have like meetings and stuff in, it's called the White Sea or something, the White Ocean.
Yes.
And the principal was accused of racism because they have a room called the White Ocean.
This
was a huge thing.
But this is like still a minority, I would say. Because I would say in the US, at least from how I'm like perceiving things, maybe in the same thing in the UK.
Yes.
It's like the majority of like the people who are left-leaning under like a certain age are all like that.
Right.
Yeah, but in terms
so
of
like everybody you meet.
Yeah.
It's really important though that you understand that it's a minority of the population. So 13% roughly of the UK is what you would call woke insofar as intersectional, identity obsessed, pro-censorship, all the rest of it. That's a minority, and they're a minority in every age bracket, but they have disproportionate clout because they're in all of the major institutions.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So they're in the civil service, they're in the government, they're in the arts, the media, academia, the police force, everywhere, right? And they've got disproportionate power. So it doesn't matter if it's a minority. It's where the minority are installed that determines whether it goes through. I mean, most people in the UK think it's stupid and think it's ridiculous. To give another example, when the Archaeological Museum at the University of Cambridge was told by the university to put up a sign next to the plaster casts of ancient Greek gods and Roman gods, and there was a sign putting up saying, explaining why they were white.
They were fictional.
Well, no, worse than that, because they were saying basically, look, we're not saying that ancient Rome wasn't ethnically diverse. You know, these plaster casts are white. But the reason they were white is because plaster is white. and people know that, and they don't need to be told that. So what I'm saying is most people would look at that and laugh. But the trouble is the people in power are the ones who write make the policy decisions, right? And that's why it could happen here if your government, and my understanding is your government's gone a bit more right-leaning at the moment.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter because I come from a country which had a conservative right-leaning government for 12 years, and all of this has happened. Mm. With, you know, you can't vote this out. You can be on the left or the right. All parties are kind of infected with it, I think.
Well, how do you get rid of them?
It's a good question. Some sort of pathogen, maybe. I don't know.
Does labor camps work? You think?
A gulag.
No,
that's their solution. I don't want to ape their ideas. I want to be more original.
But I'm very democratic. I want to give people what they want.
Yeah, exactly.
If they propose this, I will give it to them.
Well, you know, there was a socialist group at a university in London. I think it was a Goldsmiths University student union put out a statement, a pamphlet or something, talking about how the gulags, the Soviet gulags, were actually more like holiday camps. Mm. And they had sort of theatre clubs and drama and music. And so they clearly love it. Yeah. You know?
I have a theory about the Israel-Palestine conflict that is right now is making a huge split to the left between the intersexual people and also the real left.
The real left.
I mean, the one who's klassamhälle.
Class society.
You mean the intersectionalist?
Oh, that's already happened. I mean, the intersectional left are not left-wing.
Yeah, yeah.
By any means, because they don't care about class, they don't care about money.
But the conflict also making that the people who are turning to listen to the like BLM and these kind of people, they have to question the whole idea right now because they see the support for Hamas and stuff like that.
Yeah,
it's making a really huge conflict.
I would say actually, like the Israel-Palestine conflict is rather uniting the left than splitting the left.
You think?
Yeah, I think the majority of people on the left are critical of Israel.
But it depends if we look at a Swedish context and see like the Social Democrats.
The Social Democrats, they have been like, they were super quick with like blaming Israel for the Gaza hospital implosion. The leader of the Social Democrats went out on Twitter.
That was because all the media outlets immediately said so.
But she was like, she was basically nobody on the
Magdalena
right.
Magdalena Andersson, you're talking about now.
What did you say?
You're talking about
Magdalena Andersson, the leader of the Social Democrats.
Yeah.
And the Social Democrats, for example, and the Green Party here in Sweden, they are not participating in like demonstrations against anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
They are like very careful. I would say it's uniting the left rather than splitting them.
I'm not sure because I think that the people who are voting towards them, they are splitted into the two groups, because you have on our one hand the people with the immigrant background and stuff like that, but you also have the Swedes that are really threatened about the scenes that they see here on the squares and about anti-Semitism and stuff like that, and they are not supporting that part.
I would say that anybody like who is a bit left of center, they are there's two sides to this story and it's complicated and we don't know what to think about it, or they are like, yeah, okay, like the UN Secretary General, like, you know, okay, Hamas may be bad, but this, because of Israel's treatment of the Palestinians and Gaza, this is like more or less like the more you move away from the center towards the left, this is what you will get. Then far enough, you will be like...
But I think that's turning people off the intersectional left. Because, you know, there are complexities in the region and in terms of geopolitics, of course. There aren't any complexities when it comes to killing babies. That's just wrong, whoever you are and whatever. You know, so, and I think when BLM put out that post, was it the Chicago chapter in support of the Hamas? Well, I knew they'd do that because they always used to boast about their intersectional credentials on their website before they deleted it.
I really think that the Swedes' sympathy for Palestine and Arabs are kind of going down. Like when they see the scenes from Stockholm, Sergels Torg, the people were like a bunch of Arabs screaming. No matter if they're right or wrong, Swedes don't like that.
Sure.
They will just...
Especially if they are anti-Semit.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but just standing there and screaming.
Okay, you mean just screaming.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially thoughts.
Yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah.
It's more about Swedes that they are racist.
Well, no. Because the demographic is just crazy. It's like, what the fuck is going on? Like,
Swedes don't like noisy people.
Yeah, oh, is that exactly. Right? Yeah.
It's more
about it has nothing to do with anti-Semitism.
Yeah. No,
they, they couldn't give, you know, less shits about that.
But are Arabs noisy?
Yes.
Not all Arabs.
But here's the thing. Swedes won't say anything.
So this comes back to your point about the conflict-averse nature of the Swedish culture.
Yes. They won't say to people, what the fuck are you doing? Calm the fuck down.
Yeah.
They will just go and be really angry by themselves and they will vote for some party.
Yeah. Right, exactly. So is that why you've ended up with a right-wing party?
Because
it's kind of.
Partly, but the thing
it's
is...
It's because of people like Omar.
Yeah.
I see.
But I would say in the Anglosphere, like one of the main problems... is wokeness, but I would say in Sweden, one of the main problems is what I would term conflict avoidance paralysis.
Okay.
Basically, they are trying to avoid conflict, whatever conflict arises, that basically they become paralyzed, regardless of whether they like it or not.
They're too nice, in other words.
Too nice or too cowardly.
There are benefits to that, though. I'm staying in the old town. And there's so many beautiful buildings and architecture, and that's because they were neutral in the war and none of it got bombed. So there are benefits to staying out of conflict.
Of course. This just like becomes a bit more complicated if you become less culturally homogenous in a way that there is a portion of your demographics that does not really have the same attitude when it comes to avoiding conflict.
Well, that's multiculturalism. It's not a good idea. It's a racist idea. It's an idea that you keep people ghettoized in their own areas. There's no possibility of integration. It also means that the minority groups within those communities, gay people, women, etc., have no chance of anything. So it's a weird thing. It's one of those policies that is described as progressive, but it's the exact opposite.
Right.
And I think it's really bad. Personally.
I think Swedes kind of thought that it sounds good on the paper.
Yeah, exactly. Well, wokeness does. Because they say it's all about being kind and being compassionate and being nice. And then they use terms like equity. They want equity, which is not the same as equality. It's the opposite. But people think they mean equality. And they talk about diversity, and you think they mean diversity, but they don't. They mean conformity.
Yeah.
And they talk about inclusion, and you think they mean inclusion, but they mean exclusion of people who don't agree, and censorship.
I mean, you have a doctorate in Shakespeare, right? Mm. So you've read a lot of stuff. You've studied language. How important is language in this entire culture war game?
It's everything. The culture war is, by and large, a question of who gets to define the meaning of words. In tandem with that, the postmodernists believe that our entire understanding of reality is wholly constructed through language, which is why they say things like words are violence. It's why they are supportive of censorship. It's why they say Elon Musk and big tech have to censor what words online, because otherwise it will create havoc in the real world. That's their view, is that language is everything. It's also why they play language games all the time, right? So to give you an example of this... And this might be a little complex, but it'll give you a very example of the Orwellian nature of what we're dealing with. In the UK, the government at the moment is trying to do a ban on conversion therapy for LGBT people, okay? Do you know what conversion therapy is?
Yeah,
right? Back in the 60s, they used to put gay men in, they wire them up with electrodes and try and torture the homosexuality out of them. That's conversion therapy for gay people. And so they want to ban that. And that's not great. It's not happening, but let's ban it anyway. Fine, because we don't want that to happen. But within that is trans conversion therapy. Now, what they mean by trans conversion therapy is when a kid comes to a doctor and says, I think I'm in the wrong body. If the doctor says, okay, well, let's investigate that a bit. What's your background? What's going on in your life? Why might you feel this way? Activists say that that is conversion. He's trying to convert them away from their true identity, right? In 90% of those occasions, the kid is just gay, right? So what you've effectively got is a trans conversion therapy or to oppose trans conversion therapy is effectively to support a new form of gay conversion therapy. You see how confusing it is?
Yeah.
So all of this is wrapped up into the same phraseology. And so people get very confused, but it's a trick. It's a technique. You know, it's like Black Lives Matter. They say the phrase Black Lives Matter. It's a phrase you cannot disagree with.
Of course.
Right. So this is just a rhetorical trick. All of it is language. And I think the activists are very good at language games and putting you in a position where, I mean, you know, they put anti-fascist on their bios.
Yeah.
My default assumption is that you are anti-fascist. Why do you have to exclaim that? Why do you have to say that?
It's like saying I'm anti-fascist. pedophilia.
And that makes me think you're a paedophile.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not.
No, I know, yeah, I know. But that,
he's Afghan.
He's also from Afghanistan, so right. Enough said.
That is the problem, is that it suggests you're hiding something. Yeah. But even anti-racist is a very good example. So, because the phrase anti-racist sounds like you mean I'm opposed to racism. It means the opposite. Because anti-racism, the discourse of anti-racism, is the idea that you have to be proactive in the discovery of racism on the assumption, which has been propounded by critical race theorists, that all human interaction is underpinned at heart by white supremacy, and you just have to detect it. And as Ibram X. Kendi says, there's no such thing as a dichotomy of racist or not racist, because you have to be actively anti-racist, which means, in his view, not racist is a form of racism. So in other words, in order to be opposed to racism, you have to be opposed to anti-racism. Now, that's very confusing.
Wait. Can you say that again? If you want to be opposed to
racism,
yeah,
you have to be opposed to anti-racism. Because anti-racism is a racist discourse wrapped up in the language of progressive opposition to racism.
Yeah.
Andrew, could we just go back and look towards the BLM and the racists? Can we still man it? Do they have a point? The woke people, do they have valid point at some?
No. What?
There must be something there.
Yeah. The valid point at the heart of critical race theory is the question, why is it that we live in a society where there is full legal protection for black people and yet racism still lingers in society? That's the question they seek to answer. Their answer is wrong. Their answer is that systemic racism, that the at the heart of critical race theory is the idea that all of society has been created by white people in the interests of white people.
Isn't that true?
No.
There's white people and they created the white...
Is that the case in Somalia?
No, not the whole world, but the West world.
But doesn't this mean that what they're implying is what they refer to is the modernized world, the wealthy world?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, but doesn't that imply that black people can't build a wealthy world?
Well, exactly. And if black, well, no, that's what there's. It's a racist idea, exactly. Because they go into schools and say to the black kids, "You will always be oppressed. You will always be downtrodden." They're basically saying you're not capable of achieving anything.
Mm.
You know, it's a really bad message to send. But yeah, it's that principle. Yeah, the society hasn't been built through an identitarian lens. It's not like a group of white men got together and said, let's try and make everything great for white people. And
not implicitly, but maybe undermined, they were like, of course, this is just for us white people.
Oh,
and
I mean,
then we can help black Arabs and whatever to come here.
Black Arabs. What do you mean?
No, they can be part of our society, but as long as they're here, they have to cooperate with our...
No, you're right. And again, they have a point about this insofar as the wealth of America was built on slavery. So that is absolutely right. Slaves were written out of the Constitution. They didn't have rights. They were treated like cattle, all of which is an abhorrent evil, and people are right to redress that. But that has been resolved for quite a while. You won't find anyone who's pro-slavery. Those people don't really exist.
Well, they do, but they are like very far right. But
exactly, and there's a handful of them.
No, but say, to like, point... Like before,
yeah,
like in the 50s, 60s, where black people in America, when they were growing up,
yeah,
they were telling their children that, you know, life will be hard because you're black.
Yeah.
People will oppress you. And so
they had a point.
Yes, exactly. But what they said, the next sentence was, you don't give up.
Exactly.
Yeah. You have to go forward. You have to stand up for yourself.
Yeah.
Like when the police will stop you because you're black. But, you know, just be polite and, you know, like don't be a victim.
Yeah.
I don't mind that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's good. But the thing is that the black people at that time they were different. But when their children is born and they see that they're not treated equal towards white, they don't want to accept that and they want to change it. So aren't they right?
The problem is that racism exists and there are racists who will behave in a racist way, and the activists are correct about that. But their claim is not that. Because that is actually redressing those issues is what Martin Luther King, the civil rights luminaries, were attempting to do. By the way, all of whom believed in free speech at the core of their thing. The intersectionists have a completely different approach. The woke say that because society is systemically racist and all of that has been constructed linguistically and perpetuated linguistically, we have to enact censorship. We have to enact discrimination to redress. Well, Ibram X. Kendi says it perfectly. He says, the only remedy to past discrimination is present discrimination. which is not fair or right or correct. The critical race theory explicitly rejects liberalism. It rejects it. It says liberalism is the problem because racism still exists. Now, what liberals say is that society and humankind are imperfectible. So racism will always exist.
Yeah, exactly.
What liberals believe is standing up against it as and when it occurs, making society better in a piecemeal way, which, by the way, the last six decades have proved to be effective. It actually works. If you compare the 1960s to today, it's a different world because in terms of race relations because of the achievements of civil rights. What the intersectionists do is they want to unpick and undo all of that. They're explicitly against liberalism. They say that.
Could I ask you, is there a conflict between the liberal way of seeing racism and also the left? Are they looking at the racism in a totally different way?
I don't think it's a left-right issue because
but through their ideology and stuff.
It doesn't really fit as a template because all sorts of groups. I mean, one of the key misunderstandings is that people think the woke are the only ones who oppose racism. No, the left oppose racism, the right oppose racism, religious people oppose racism.
But maybe they see it in a different way.
They see it as systemic. They see it as to do with power structures.
But
exactly.
they are racist, though. Like, did you hear about there was this debate on how, the way the elections were going in the U.S. are discriminating against black people. I didn't look into it so much, but I was like listening to Coleman Hughes on Joe Rogan recently. And you know what this is about? Those woke people said it's discriminatory because like you have to produce your ID. They said that black people don't have ID. They can't get ID.
They don't
ID.
Know how to apply for
they
it.
They don't have to. What the fuck? I was like shocked that this is like even something that you can say.
It's really patronizing.
It's racist also.
It's racist, yeah.
If you're black, you'll not be able to apply for an ID. What is that?
Well, similarly, I was in New York relatively recently and I went in to buy some shampoo from a shop and it was all behind chained glass and you had to ask, and it was only like $6. And the reason was that in New York, unless you steal more than $1,000 worth, it's not a crime. So you can go in there and just fill your basket and walk out. And this is since BLM. And the implication being, black people are going to steal things, aren't they? That's just their culture.
Yeah.
So you've just got to let them get on with it.
Is they illegalize theft?
Effectively.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you lying, Andrew?
No, you can check that. It's all in the public domain. It's absolutely true.
It
sounds insane.
In Portland or something, right?
Portland is a hellhole. It's just full of posh white people speaking on behalf of black people. I love those videos. Do you remember the Autonomous Zone, Chaz, the Autonomous Zone in DC? Yeah. And I remember seeing a video of these posh white kids guarding the entrance saying, this is a black, shouting at a black police officer saying, you're racist, part of the racist system. It's like, you'll shut up, white kids. It's so funny. It's awful. Anyway.
But is there like, when I think about all this, because this is like very chaotic.
Yeah.
And is there a risk that this kind of triggers a reaction that is on the other far side?
Of course it does, yeah.
That basically because it gets so chaotic and disorderly at some point that people, we need somebody to vanquish this chaos. And then they vote like fascists.
There's two things. Firstly, if you espouse a worldview where we're expected to see people first and foremost through the prism of race and their group identity, do you think just black people are going to do that? Because then you're going to get white nationalism. People saying, well, we'll do the same then. And that's happened.
Right.
Like, because the far right, although it's still a very fringe minority group, they're escalating at an alarming rate, because we have now, they're saying to themselves, well, those people are identifying in terms of their race. And so we're going to do the same. And that's not good news. And we see that where that leads. But also, exactly what you say, people are going to start voting in the privacy of the ballot booth, where you're not open, you don't have to tell people what you voted for. People are going to start voting for more extremist parties that can control this.
Right.
Because the left-wing parties, although they should take a hold of it, are just going along with it. Joe Biden, who was nominated because he was considered the anti-woke candidate. First thing when he's in office, he passes an executive order saying men can participate in women's sports if they identify as women. Straight away. He's just like a puppet for the woke. So it's, but then they'll vote him out.
Don't you think when he signed that, he was like, what the fuck, really? I don't believe this.
I don't think he was awake at all.
No,
yeah, but he's like 90 years old. I don't think he believes in that.
No one does. I mean, he must see. Well, actually, people have woken up to it since they saw that picture. Do you remember Leah Thomas, the swimmer?
Yeah.
You know, this 6'3" bloke standing on a podium with these girls, teenage girls next to him, being like, we should have won that. And everyone saw that photo. You know, he was getting undressed in front of them and all this sort of stuff. And you see that and you think that, no, it's cheating, isn't it? I don't care if he genuinely thinks he's a woman. We all have our own delusions. That's fine. But he's cheating. Like, he's biologically much more powerful than those girls.
Yeah.
It's not even up for debate. That just is the way it is. But then you have things like Scientific American, major medical journals now publishing articles saying there's no evidence that there's any difference between the sexes when it comes to sports. There's no evidence that trans women in sport do better.
Can I ask you a direct question? Is Jeremy Corbyn, is he an anti-Semite?
I don't know him, so I don't know. You'd have to ask him.
What would Titania say?
I mean, well, yeah. Oh, well, she doesn't like Jews.
But really?
She says in the book, she says, well, no, she's got this thing about...
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Well, look, with Titania, she says she's really progressive and loves Jewish people, but of course she has this. I think she says she really admires them because they're so smart and cunning, and so she reveals her anti-Semitism without, you know, that's the point. She's a racist.
So what's her position on the Israel-Palestine conflict?
Oh, well, she would take the high status position.
I see.
Which would be Palestine. So she would be very pro-Palestine. Also, she would think that Palestine is a haven for gay rights.
Right.
So she's probably going to do a tour of Gaza with her sort of intersectional slam poetry. Because she thinks...
Gaza Pride.
She thinks they're... Oh, Gaza Pride. She thinks they're allies. You know, because she's talked about this. There was a tweet I did where she quoted all the hate crime statistics throughout the world. And she's like, you know, there's been 1,000 arrests for homophobic hate crime in America, 500 in the UK, 0 in Saudi Arabia. So Saudi Arabia is a haven for gay rights. It's wonderful. You know, she just does, you know, that, and that, you saw those queers for Palestine, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so they don't get it. And also that's really bad for gay people in Palestine. How about those people?
Didn't they massacre a pride flag in one of the pro-Palestine rallies?
So there was a pro-Palestine rally, 100,000 people in London. Someone...
100,000?
Yeah. Someone put up a Pride flag, thinking that would go down well. Because they believe it. They think that the Hamas is part of the intersectional grievance thing. and of course, someone tore it down and got very, very upset.
They threw him over from a rooftop.
They didn't go that far.
No.
How do people in Britain react when they see 100,000 Arabs and Palestinians screaming on the streets?
Well, it wasn't. They were mostly white people.
It was.
Yeah, it was mostly white people. I mean, there were a lot of people. It was diverse. It was a diverse thing. But it was mostly just, it was a left-wing gathering. It was a left-wing rally, really.
I'm telling you, and this is like, this is not just an immigrant thing.
No, no, no. What I mean, what people were bothered about, I think, was when Hizbut Tahrir were there, by the way. Hizbut Tahrir did a thing about jihad, calling for jihad.
Yeah, as usual.
And Hizbut Tahrir are, of course, banned in most Arab countries for good reason.
There were groups calling for jihad in the demonstration here as well in Stockholm.
Yeah, but of course then the Met Police, did you see this? The Met Police tweeted out saying, we didn't do anything because jihad means lots of different things. it can be just a walk in the garden in the summer. It can mean a kind of peaceful, hypnotic struggle or something. But they were...
Struggle. It could be struggle as well.
But Hizbut Tahrir, we're talking about the armies of jihad. We must march against... I mean, the context was pretty clear.
Can you tell me about the politics in Britain right now? With the conflicts with the Israel-Palestine? How has the MPs and...
Well, everyone's condemned it.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, every major politician has openly condemned it. When Jeremy Corbyn condemned it, he also put a little caveat about, but we must support Palestine and, usual thing. But even he did condemn it.
How did he do it? He was like, Hamas is awful, free Palestine!
I mean, it goes back to your question of whether he's an anti-Semite. The truth is, most Jewish people, by polling, believe that he is an anti-Semite.
Yeah.
He's not on record as saying things that are explicitly anti-Semitic, but he has, for instance, he held a wreath at the funeral of one of the murderers in the Israel attack. Do you remember the Olympic attack? I think it was, right. Do you remember the
when was that?
Many decades ago, they infiltrated the Olympics and massacred the Israeli athletes.
Yeah.
And one of the murderers at his funeral, I think Corbyn, it was that funeral where he was holding a wreath and he's described Hamas as our friends.
What?
He says he was doing that strategically because he said he regrets that, by the way. I should give him his due. But he said that he was... organizing some kind of round the table discussion. And so he said, our friends in Hamas, as a kind of rhetorical diplomatic thing, right? But even so, it's dodgy, right? You don't say, my friend Jack the Ripper.
Say that.
Would you? But you're a contrarian. So
yeah, but if I was friend with Jack the Ripper, I mean, come on.
Well, luckily he's long dead. Politicians have all expressed their horror at what happened. I don't see how they could do otherwise, and I think it's sincere. I don't know anyone who could honestly say that there's any moral justification for that. I've seen people try to make moral justifications, but those aren't people I would associate with.
Would you say that the support could waver at some point? Because I'm starting to get like a little bit. It's very obvious where things are going.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like starting to get obvious how the reactions will be. Because the world is like, it's now what, like, according to Hamas, like maybe close to 4,000 people who have died in Gaza recently, something like that. But this number will climb up drastically when the incursion starts.
Yeah.
And like, take just like Hamas fighters, it's estimated that they have between 40,000 to 70,000 people or something like that. So these people will die. So you will have like north of 100,000 deaths in Gaza.
Yeah.
Take in the West Bank and Lebanon when those fronts will open up as well. So we will have like probably up to maybe close to 250,000 people or something like that. And I wonder, would the West and would the UK still stand by Israel's side when the death toll climb up so high?
So, I mean, it's so hard, isn't it? And so long as Israel continues making as much effort as possible to avoid civilian casualties, which is what they're currently doing. And of course, I know there have been arguments and debates about how they failed on that camp in the past. I'm not negating that. But at the moment, that is the fundamental ethical difference here.
Right.
You can't really compare a group that deliberately target and torture and rape civilians compared to a military operation where they deliberately try to avoid 100%. Civilian deaths. They are not morally comparable. And of course, the civilian deaths in Gaza at the moment, the fault of that lies with Hamas, of course.
Absolutely.
There is no choice. I don't think Israel has a choice but to attempt to wipe Hamas from the face of the earth. There's no choice now.
They don't, but at the same time, there is this very strange, and I think because of the absence of war in the West for a long time, there is very strange, naive expectation that no civilians die in war.
Well, it's because we can see it. It's because of video. It's because of internet. We see it now.
Yeah.
So any combat has civilian deaths. We know that, but because we are seeing them all live streamed,
right?
It looks. I mean, it's horrible.
And I think also like because of like some kind of moral progress when it comes to like respecting human life that we have like gone through like in the past decades culturally.
Yeah.
We're no longer as comfortable with like collateral damage as before.
Yeah.
But in war, innocent people die and it's very tragic, but
happens. You don't target them. I mean, this is why the bombing of Dresden by the UK during the Second World War was such an atrocity. It was not justifiable. I mean, they were deliberately targeting a civilian area. And committed mass murder, in my view. It's not right. And people recognized that at the time. You know, when during the Raj, at the Amritsar massacre, similarly. I mean, people use that as an example of the evils of the British Empire. But at the time, it was denounced by every major politician,
right,
saying this is an evil, you can't do this. So that's the fundamental distinction. The problem now is that innocent Gazans are going to die as a result of Hamas's actions.
Right.
Can you give us some tips? Because for the past like week or two, when I'm engaging about Israel-Palestine with some friends or people I know, it's really like they can say, they will say, yes, I will condemn Hamas, but then you have to say that Israel is a terror state.
So what do they want then? Well, I think I would ask the question.
Yeah.
What is it you actually want? You know, all these people marching pro-Palestine said, what do you actually want? Do you want a two-state solution? Because Hamas don't. Yeah. Hamas's charter says what it wants. It wants Israel wiped off the map and all the Jews killed. So it's very explicit. So is that what they're saying the solution is? Because if that's the solution, it's not a solution at all. But I'd say the tip is ask the question. Get them to say what their objective is. How do they see this ending?
Because, I mean, I don't know, but the people I talk to, they say pretty clearly, like, free Palestine from river to the sea.
Well, that means destroy Israel.
Yeah,
depends on their background. I think it gets more confusing if they are Westerners. You know, these are like it's almost like they haven't thought it through. Because I understand, because I used to think that way as well.
Yeah,
I come from Egypt, and I used to like be like one of my childhood dreams was to join Hamas. Basically,
really,
yeah. So I really understand the other side.
Yeah, yeah.
So for them, I know that they just like want all the Jews outside out of Israel. They don't.
But they say
Israel.
It. They say it explicitly. Yeah, no one's lying about it.
But the ones that I don't understand are the Westerners who join these demonstrations and they say that they want a free Palestine. What do you mean?
Yeah,
like free Palestine with Hamas?
They don't know what they mean.
That's exactly the question.
They want to side with victims.
That's the question. Yeah. So that's why I would ask the question. Because unless they can answer that question, it means their stance is basically incoherent, isn't it?
Mm.
Unless you know what you mean by free Palestine, what's the point in... It's just a slogan. It's just empty. It doesn't mean anything.
Isn't the entire narrative false? I mean, from the beginning, it's as if there is this huge group that's united, that's called the Palestinians.
Yeah.
And then you have everyone else, or the Israeli Jews. But you have to take into account that you have 2 million Arab Israelis.
Yeah.
Who could have called themselves Palestinians.
But they're not.
And exactly, and that's interesting. Why don't they call themselves Palestinians? All the Arabs who've left that area and went to Dubai and other countries and the US and built careers and work and do all these normal things, they don't call themselves Palestinians.
Right. Yeah.
So it's a fake narrative.
Because it's better to live in Israel.
Yes.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Of course it is.
So that's clearly the case.
But isn't that because the Jews are white and the world is run by white supremacy?
That's what they say, unfortunately.
Have you met a Jew? Have you ever met a Jew?
He's one. But
they do say that, don't they? But they forget, of course, that Israel is majority not white.
But the steel man, their position a little bit, like I would say that there is, ethnically speaking, there is a group that identify as Palestinians, right? And they want to have a state.
But what's the difference between a Palestinian and an Arab? Aside from the fact that you happen
to be social status,
cultural, like in any ethnic, like an ethnic group, like cultural heritage, you can say what's the difference between an Egyptian and a Palestinian, for example, like cultural heritage, like maybe ancestry in this geographical location, dialect, for example, they have a very different dialect from other.
Yeah, but isn't Palestinian as a nationality a rather new concept?
as a nationality, yes.
Yeah.
It's thanks but, I mean, to Jews.
It's the same thing for all Arabs, basically. It's like it doesn't go like back very far.
Yeah.
Yes, but they do want a state. It's just this is why I have a very big problem with talking about moral stances and feelings when it comes to this issue, because you cannot really talk about that without talking about practical reality.
Yeah.
Like, what do you want? So I would tell them, okay, so you have a group of people, the Palestinians, who want to have their own state, but they want to have it all the land, and they want all the Israelis out. Okay, deal with this. Now, how will you have peace? What peace are you talking about? They don't want peace. They want peace only when the Jews are out of the whole region. So what do you think Israel should do? This is the question that nobody poses, really. And this is very frustrating. Like, these people who are criticizing Israel, what do you want to do? Mm. What should they just let Hamas be and, like, hope for the best? What do you want them to do?
Well, that's the question. Yeah? That's the big question.
What would Titania say?
How would she reply?
Does she have a solution to the Middle East crisis? I think her solution is poetry. intersectional slam poetry. She will go there and they will unite. I think that's it.
But wouldn't it be the same if you would ask a very hardcore woke intersectionalist,
yes,
what do you want?
Oh, no, but they do answer that, I think. They want an end to injustice.
Right, and doesn't it always imply wiping some group out of face of the earth?
The one that has more power.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's right.
Because it sounds a lot like anti-Semitism. It's the same core blueprint.
Yeah, I mean, because they believe in these power structures and these hierarchies of privilege, and white people are very much at the top of that. Those are the most privileged people, and therefore they must be demonized, etc. Yeah, I mean, I don't think they've thought it through. I don't think they've thought what their end goal is, actually. I think it's a kind of, we know where it leads. You know, when you implement woke ideas, society collapses. So we know where it ends up. It's just a dystopian wasteland. But I don't think they haven't thought it through. They haven't given you like a blueprint of where exactly we're going. It's not a coherent ideology, in my view. In fact, I'd say it's internally incoherent. And that's part, and that's a feature of it, not a bug of it. It's meant to be confusing.
It makes perfect sense.
Does it?
That their ideology doesn't make sense. That makes sense.
Well, because it's the idea of the promotion of... here's what it is. They're not interested in reality. That's why it's a problem. That's why when you watch CNN reporting on the mostly peaceful protests in Kenosha, and behind the reporter are burning cars and buildings... You look at that and think, you're describing this as mostly peaceful, but we can see that it isn't. But the woke believe everything is to do with language. So if they call it mostly peaceful, then it is. If they call a woman a man or a man a woman, then they are so. So it's just about the language that they use. Truth doesn't matter.
And the reason also does not matter. Math does not matter. Like,
math is racist.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this is like yeah.
Math is racist.
They say that explicitly. So, Professor.
But it was the Arabs who invented
they
math.
They don't know that. They don't know that. So for instance, they know nothing of history. And when they do learn about history, they just rewrite it. Like the 1619 project, or, you know, they just, even their own fact checkers said, hang on a minute, this is weird. So they just rewrite history, but they do it in real time. So they'll say like, oh no, that didn't happen. What we all saw happened, it didn't actually happen. You know, they just change things. But maths, there's a professor called Rochelle Gutierrez, who is one of these whiteness studies professors or something. Yeah. She says mathematics is inherently to do with whiteness. You know, Titania makes a joke about, a joke. She says, because the KKK used to intimidate people by setting fire to plus signs to intimidate their victims. Yeah. She says that. So and they've had all these people online talking about how, you know how in George Orwell's 1984, it ends with Winston Smith saying 2 + 2 = 5 because the party has told him, and he believes it. By the end, he believes it because the party has repeatedly told him 2 + 2 = 5. Now you have woke activists deliberately saying that, saying, actually, 2 + 2 = 5.
If you're the right color.
Not even that. I mean, I'm talking about mathematicians, but activist mathematicians are now saying precisely that. There are huge debates going online about
what
this.
What the fuck?
They deny reality. They do what they call gaslighting.
Yeah.
They completely deny reality because it's All tyrants in history have done this. They will make you, tyrants make you say things that are not true as a means to exert control.
And actually, maybe even a show of, like, as an expression of loyalty.
Yeah.
Because if you are willing to commit to an outrageous statement or idea,
yes,
that means that's like, you know, you're really showing that you're loyal to whether to the group or to the leader and so on.
Well, exactly. I mean, that's the point of 1984. That's the whole point of this. It's the point of Hans Christian Andersen's story about the emperor with no clothes,
right?
Which I'm sure you all know.
Yeah,
you know, everyone knows he's naked. No one can say he's naked, and it takes a child to see through it.
Right.
You know, and that's what the woke do. They create, everyone knows that there are only two sexes and no one has ever changed sex. Everyone knows that. The test of loyalty to the woke movement is that you pretend not to know it. And you say, when you are asked, what is a woman, as that Supreme Court nominee Ketanji Brown Jackson did, said, I can't answer that question. I'm not a biologist. Now, I've got a biology GCSE, but I can answer that question. Yeah. You know, I'm not very informed, but I know enough to know that that's wrong. The fact that politicians panic when they are asked what is a woman tells you that there is a ruling ideology that says we must lie.
There is a mob. Yeah. And the same thing happened also when it comes to, like, speaking of, like, not offering real solution, rejecting reason.
Yeah.
When it comes to mass migration, and when people were trying to say, okay, but, like, what limit can we have? Like, what number? And they would reply, no, it's dehumanizing to talk about numbers.
Well, also because they're cultural relativists. So they believe that everyone, that you can't judge another cultural practice, even if it is FGM or whatever. You know, it's everyone's equal all around the world. And they don't see that some values are not compatible with Western values. And they won't, they will not. I'll give you an example of this. When Pakistan, the Pakistani government started funding people to have sex changes, as Iran does. You know why Iran does it? Because they kill gay people. So if you change sex, you're suddenly heterosexual. So they'll fund that. Now, when the Pakistani government did that, they've recently repealed it, but about 5 years ago, they said, we're going to pay for sex changes. The Pink News, a gay website in the UK, said, this is a great step forward for trans rights. And Pakistan is saying yes to the LGBT community. No, they're trying to surgically erase gay people, you right. Idiots. And so they'll twist it in order to, because they're minorities, you know, the Muslims of Pakistan are a minority and therefore they must be noble. It's the old noble savage idea. It's the old race.
It's the biggest minority in Pakistan.
It's a huge Pakistanis. Minority. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You're of course familiar with Douglas Murray. How much noise did this statement of his made recently in the UK? And what do you think about it when he said that everybody who professes sympathy or loyalty for Hamas to be stripped of his citizenship and basically transported to Gaza?
Yeah, I heard about it. I don't agree with it. Because ultimately, I do believe in freedom of speech, even if it's speech that I find abhorrent. Mm. But, you know, Douglas is a brilliant guy. He's very intelligent, lovely, lovely guy, and is maligned unfairly, I think, by people who, you know, just hate what he has to say. But I think he's coming from a background of he wrote a book about this called The Strange Death of Europe. He's gone out of his way to sort of investigate this, talk to immigrants here. He understands and appreciates why people want to move to more prosperous countries. You know, the idea that it's not that his ideas aren't based in a humane perception is false. You know, he understands it. But he also thinks that culturally we become immiserated when migration is uncontrolled. And he has got a point. I just disagree with him on that point. I think the better solution to that kind of thing is through assimilation, argument and protest. I think I don't have a problem with immigration, so long as people sort of accept that the values of Western society include, for instance, free speech, liberty, that you have to adopt those values.
But what if they say they don't want to?
Well, then I think there's a problem.
Yeah, but what are you going to do about it? This is, I think...
Well, no, we have a system. We have the law. So the system of social liberalism is quite straightforward. You can do whatever you want with your life, say whatever you want, believe whatever you want, act however you want, right up until the point that you encroach on someone else's rights. So we have that. So if you believe that free speech is wrong and that the infidels must die or whatever, I say you're free to believe all of that. But when you act upon it, then that's against the law and you are in prison.
But laws are not natural laws.
They're not. Though. No.
So, for example, let's say if you suddenly infuse your society with, I don't know, a very big proportion of people from the Middle East.
Yeah.
Let's say half of the UK becomes people from the Middle East. Laws can change.
Well, this is precisely what... But that comes about from a failure to uphold the principles of liberalism. It comes from a... It's when the UK government says, oh, you can have your Sharia courts. You can have a parallel system of justice. That's a failure.
I think what Omar is trying to say that when you have a huge numbers,
yes,
they can be part of changing the law.
Absolutely, yeah, and, that's right.
When you're changing the law, then you're acting according to the law.
That's right. That's why you have a sensible system of migration. You don't have unchecked migration.
Yeah, exactly. That means that you have to have a restrictive enough...
That's not deportation.
No. I'm talking about migration in general. Restrictive enough migration.
No, I'm not against a sensible migration policy. Mm. But a sensible migration policy would include not having mass migration to this extent, to the extent that you can no longer control the way the culture goes.
Right.
Which is what's happened. Someone told me the other day that 47% of people living in Malmo are not born in Sweden.
Yeah.
I found that difficult to believe. I thought it wasn't true.
That's true.
But apparently it is. Now, that is unsustainable. Or quite obviously unsustainable. Mm. A culture will fall apart. You will surrender to...
Okay. Du har lyssnat så här långt. På sista måltid. En mycket fin radioprogram i Sverige. Du tycker det är mycket trevligt. Men, lyssna på mig nu. Det här var inte hela avsnittet. Det var bara en liten smakprov. Hela avsnittet är nämligen mycket längre. Om du vill lyssna på alla hela avsnitten, då du måste betala biljet på klubb sista måltid. De har grabbarna dom behöver pengar. Flis. Lax. Stolar. För att betala räkningar. Köpa blodpudding till familjen. Åka tunnelbana. Eller dricka en kall Norrlands guld på uteservering ibland. Läs i beskrivning för avsnitt, där det finns information för att bli medlem på klubb sista måltid. Det kostar som ett par kaffe latte ute på torget. Per månad. Som ett pakiet erbjudande, helt enkelt. Lätt som en plätt. Tack, min vän.